New research at the National Institute of Health identifies several potential therapies from among 6,000 drugs already commercially available could help speed discovery of medications for Zika and prevent the neurological disorders associated with it.
Donald Trump is heading to Mexico, where he'll meet with President Nieto. This is Trump's first trip abroad, meeting with another nation's leader. He'll be joined by former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Senator Jeff Sessions.
Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is one step closer to her seventh term in Congress after being back this primary challenge from Tim Canova. This is the first primary challenge she's faced in her congressional career, and she told reporters and supporters tonight that she feels a great sense of relief and gratification from this victory.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. Lots to talk about today. Coming up in our second half of the program, we'll talk more about the latest airfares. Cheap fares continue out of Chicago, and also the poaching of a big name at United from American Airlines. We'll talk to Rick Cini coming up. Also this morning, more Fed chatter about the interest rate hike that may or may not be coming this year. But first, on the WGN Market Desk, here's your overnight intel from around the globe. Asian stocks mixed in listless trading today ahead of key jobs data later this morning in the U.S. that could lead to higher interest rates. Japan's benchmark Nikkei 225 gained about 1% overnight. South Korea's index lost about 0.5% in Hong Kong, down nearly 0.5%. The Shanghai composite was up just a bit. Yesterday on Wall Street, the Dow fell 49 points, the S&P fell 4, and the NASDAQ fell 9. On this day ahead, National Association of Realtors will today say how many Americans signed contracts to buy homes in July. Last month's pending home sales index comes as the housing market sees stronger demand and a shortage of properties being listed for sale. Pending sales contracts are a barometer of future purchases, so this could drive the markets as we move through the morning. Also today, Germany, Europe's biggest economy, will release August unemployment figures there. A former Monsanto executive who tipped off regulators about the agribusiness giant's accounting practices involving rebates for its Roundup weed killer will get nearly $22 million as a whistleblower. The Securities and Exchange Commission announced that payout yesterday comes out of the $80 million penalty that the St. Louis-based company agreed to pay under a February settlement with the agency. Google is set to expand a San Francisco carpooling program that could morph into a showdown with the one-time ally, Uber. Plans will build upon a test service that Google's navigation app launched 3 months ago in the San Francisco Bay Area. This is important because anybody who uses this app to offer a limited pool, it's the Waze app, trying to get people to work or home, will be affected, could be affected by this across the country as these two companies do a showdown over who provides the best service. There was more chatter yesterday about the Federal Reserve and whether they will raise interest rates this year. Chicago Federal Reserve Bank President Charles Evans, the latest out on the circuit, says he's increasingly convinced that the U.S. economic growth has slowed permanently, a situation that will keep U.S. interest rates low for a long time ahead. Embracing Harvard professor Larry Summers' so-called secular stagnation theory, Evans argues that an aging U.S. population and slowing productivity and growth means there is little reason for interest rates to rise either fast or far. That's part of our discussion this morning as we join Heather Long of CNN Money, who has been writing about this and covering this and watching, just like the rest of us, the Fed parade of governors as they talk about the interest rates. Good morning, Heather Long.
Good morning.
So we always, Charles Evans has always been sort of the bear in the room about in raising interest rates. He's not really a supporter of it. How much should we take about his words at face value?
Well, it's interesting. Generally speaking, the rule of thumb is it's about 90% what the Fed chair says, so what Janet Yellen says, about 5% what the vice chair Stanley Fischer says, and about 5% what all the other Fed governors say. So in that case, you wouldn't take what he's saying too strongly. You really need to focus on Yellen. However, what I'm reading through all of this parade of people, that was a great word for you to use, is that there's been a lot of chatter from all of them in the past 2 weeks and really all this summer. But I continue to think December is when they're likely to move, not September.
Is there a betting on this in the economic world? Is there a up or down from the from Wall Street, from investors?
Definitely. And in that case, they sound more like they're betting on the lower for longer of your Chicago Fed president than they do of what some of the other governors have tried to say. So I was just looking it up, and the September odds are below about 0.25%. So they're very low, usually the first September rate hike. Now, December, they've jumped up. They're well over 50%. They're in the 66% range now. So again, the market's really reading these comments lately of many of the governors who, unlike Chicago, have suggested that we are near full employment, inflation's moving up, we're meeting our targets, the economy's doing pretty well, that it's time to raise rates again. But the market's generally been reading that as December.
We're on with Heather Long this morning. She's a senior stock market and economy writer at CNN Money at Heather at By Heather Long on Twitter.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors continue to wonder when the Fed might raise interest rates, and that uncertainty kept markets down Tuesday. The Dow lost nearly 49 points. The S&P fell 4 points. The Nasdaq gave up 9 points. The next key piece of U.S. economic data is coming on Friday with the August jobs report. Abercrombie & Fitch is closing up to 60 stores in the U.S. after a worse-than-expected second quarter. Shares of Abercrombie fell more than 20% on the news. Uber has hired Target's former chief marketing officer to be the company's president of ride-sharing. Uber is believed to be laying the groundwork for a long-awaited IPO. And Chipotle continues to offer freebies to attract customers following a series of food scares. The company's offering free kids' meals on Sundays in September. Earlier, it came out with a loyalty program for free meals and is giving students a free beverage if they buy a meal and show an ID. Mona Rivera, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 519. We're on with Heather Long this morning, the senior stock market economy writer at CNN Money by Heather Long on Twitter. Heather, I know you read this story yesterday as we saw the Case-Shiller Index come out. One of the co-creators of it, Robert Shiller, talking about how the economy's hesitation is really part and parcel of an economic slowdown. And is that what we're seeing now, do you think, this period of hesitation on everybody's part?
Well, it's interesting. I think you can read the data how you want to see it. And so what people like Mr. Shiller, who's certainly Nobel Prize-winning economist, are looking at are things like, wait a minute, the United States has only been growing less than 1% so far this year, the first half of the year. And everybody, or many people at the Federal Reserve keep saying, yeah, but we're going to get the second half bounce. You know, it really bounced back here in the third quarter and is likely to carry through the fourth quarter. But you can see why there would be some skepticism about that. And Shiller really pointed to two things when he was speaking yesterday. He said, well, you know, businesses just aren't spending. And some people have blamed that on the election, all the uncertainty around the Trump and Clinton and the election going on. You know, other people have sort of pointed to that longer-term argument that Chicago Fed chief was saying, which is, look, there's something just not right in this economy. We're kind of in this odd period of stagnation, and we need to be more mindful. The other thing, of course, Case-Shiller, Mr. Shiller's known for the housing index. And I was surprised. Housing, most people have read as on the rebound and having a very strong summer. But Shiller was looking at the latest numbers that just came out yesterday, and he actually seemed to imply that he thought it was slowing down a bit, and that the Fed needed to be mindful. They needed a little bit more data so that they shouldn't move in September, should wait till December just to make sure that some of these dips in the data are not indicative of a turnaround, of a sort of cooling of the economy.
Yeah, and part of what he said, too, was that consumers hesitate to buy new homes or cars. They hesitate in many other ways as well. You mentioned the workplace and corporations and companies. But do you think he was also thinking about, when he was talking about procrastination, the Fed, and perhaps their procrastinating or hesitation about raising interest rates?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what he was saying. And I've said it, too, for months, that the Janet Yellen Fed, when in doubt, they hesitate. You know, they push the can down the road. And that's why it seems quite likely they will do that again in September. The only thing that could really change a lot of people's minds, you know, the stock market has been flat. The bond market's not moving much. Even the dollar, which normally moves around when people really think something's going to happen, that, you know, all this stuff is basically at a flat August. But the one thing that could change people's mind is this Friday, we get the latest look at the jobs report. And if we have another strong month like we did in June and July, that could shake people up. Because that will make it harder to think that the economy is stalling or slumping or stagnating or whatever your favorite term is.
The presidential candidates seem to be having a month. Donald Trump is going to Mexico today, or he's going to visit Mexico soon after his comments about immigration. He's going to be making that immigration speech. Wall Street has pretty much made up their mind about who they want to be president, right?
Well, it certainly seems to me that with the stock market at record highs, even though August has been a very yawn kind of month, with the stock market where it is and the bond market where it is, it seems that most people in Wall Street are pricing in Hillary Clinton to win, however, with the House staying Republican. So they're kind of counting on that, not a lot happening in Washington or not a lot extreme happening in Washington, because that divided government will keep everybody in check. So
the other part of what's happening lately is oil prices. We're seeing oil prices still low and not where they should be. This hurting the economies of countries around the world?
It certainly is. And I think case number one is Venezuela. I mean, you're looking at a country where people can't even get basic food items. You know, they're currently trying to trade oil with other Caribbean nations like Jamaica just to get bandages and various foods. It's a dire situation there. People are trying to flee over the border to Colombia to get away. And that country is clearly suffering from low oil prices. A lot of people also obviously point to the Middle East, point to Saudi Arabia. The fact that it's just been a dramatic decline in the power of OPEC, that organization that stunned us all in the 70s by raising oil prices. And today they just do not have the power and the unity that they once did. Saudi Arabia continues to feud with its rival Iran, even though it would make sense for Saudi Arabia to raise oil prices, or at least try to raise oil prices by cutting back on production. They just don't want to do it because they want to keep oil prices low to make life pretty bad for their neighbor and longtime rival Iran. So it's just a really weird situation in the oil market right now. All month, you know, we've seen a couple of spikes up and then come down. Oil continues to trade around $45, give or take. You know, it'll go up for a few days and then it'll come back down on new news. So it's kind of, you know, you look all around and the market in August has just been in wait and see mode. You know, literally it's flat for this month. So I think Friday is really the only jolt we could get when that job data comes out.
Anyone who follows you on Twitter, again, at By Heather Long, you curate a lot of really good topics. I want to pull out something that you retweeted recently, since agriculture's tops on the minds of a lot of people here in Illinois this week with our neighbors having the big Farm Progress Show. A chart about the American workforce in agriculture from 1840 to 2000, and the title of it, When Someone Says Automation and Self-Driving Cars Will Cause Massive Unemployment, point out this chart. Boy, was I surprised when I saw that chart from where it's gone to where it is now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could probably look at your own families. My family, my grandparents actually are from Illinois, and so is my mother. And, you know, great-grandparents worked on farms, and grandparents worked on farms and then transitioned to building roads in the state of Illinois. And, you know, you can see it in that numbers going in sort of around the turn of the 1900s. you know, the vast majority of Americans were still working on farms. And today, you might have the exact number, but it's like around 1% or fewer of the U.S. population is working in agriculture.
Yeah, the chart goes from 70 to like 1%. Yeah,
right. It's so dramatic. And it's interesting because I've been having this debate a lot with friends and colleagues, and there's a lot of talk about the rise of robots. You know, we've got movies about it, but also it's a very legit question. And I think, when Trump goes around the country and talks about the loss of manufacturing jobs, well, some of that sure is from overseas competition, but some of it is because those tasks are being done by robots or machines now that used to be done by humans. And so we are seeing that the similar decline, or we're kind of in the middle of it, of manufacturing jobs. And people keep saying, wait a minute, you know, robots are getting more and more sophisticated. Are they going to do the jobs of doctors? You know, we see them in operations now. Are they going to do your job and my job, Steve? And could they have a more fun time speaking on a radio or collecting news? So as they become more and more sophisticated, people are worried that they're just going to sweep away, I've heard forecasts and seen forecasts from very reputable economists projecting in the next couple of decades, we can have 50% unemployment because of these robots and artificial intelligence. Now, again, these are extreme forecasts and conditions, and that's why that chart's so interesting. And we've heard this before. We heard it, what are people going to do if they don't work on the farm? Yeah. Well, we transitioned to manufacturing. Now we're in this period. What are Americans going to do without the manufacturing jobs? Well, believe it or not, our unemployment rate is below 5% because many of us are working in what they call the service sector or the brain sector of the economy now. And so, that the fear about the next wave that we're all going to have to be replaced by robots, some people say, wait a minute. We're smart. We're an agile economy. We'll find new jobs.
Heather Long, a senior money writer at CNN Money. By Heather Long. By the way, you've probably seen that video, Heather, the robots exercising. They now exercise. So we should all be very worried.
Great.
Thanks for being with us, Heather.
Better than me, then.
Exactly. And me, too. Have a nice day, Heather.
You too. Bye now.
From ABC News, tech trends, gadget ideas for those planning to study abroad. There's a lot to consider if you want to take your education on the road, starting with what you should bring when it comes to technology.
You can't bring too much with you, so you have to be careful about what you bring, and the things that you do bring have to have good battery life. They have to be fairly portable.
Dana Wollman is with the tech blog Engadget. She says you'll, of course, need power adapters, possibly a portable surge protector, and something to document your journey.
You might want a camera that's better than your smartphone camera.
But at the same time, she says, you want a camera that's not as heavy as, say, a DSLR. Another tip, consider the kind of smartphone you want to bring.
We recommend the OnePlus 3 smartphone, which actually has two SIM card slots, meaning you don't have to ever take out the SIM card from your home country. You can just rent or buy a prepaid SIM in your host country and therefore save a little bit of money.
And lastly, noise-canceling headphones are a great investment, especially for those long plane or train rides. With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:39 this morning. The first commercial flight between the U.S. and Cuba in more than a half century, scheduled to take off from Fort Lauderdale on its way to Santa Clara, Cuba. JetBlue Flight 387 will take off at 8:45 Chicago time this morning for a 72-minute journey, reestablishing regular air service. More than 400 flights a week are planned. And this first JetBlue flight from the U.S. to Cuba will have several special passengers. AP correspondent Sandy Kozel is in Fort Lauderdale.
On board that first JetBlue flight from Fort Lauderdale to the central Cuban city of Santa Clara, U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox, JetBlue CEO Robin Hayes, and a specially selected five-member crew of Cuban Americans.
Rick Cini is with us from faircompare.com this morning from Dallas at faircompare at Rick Cini to talk about some other stories affecting aviation and travel. And Rick, good morning. Welcome to the program. I know that you saw the story about Boeing or United poaching one of the top talent at American Airlines to be its new president. What's going on at United?
Yeah, no, I think this was sort of odd news because Kirby had come up through the ranks through America West, through the merger, had moved everybody through the merger, wanted to have U.S. Airways management team in charge of American Airlines, got everything he wanted, and then jumped over to United Airlines. Kind of shocking news, actually.
What do you think's at play here?
I think maybe he thinks American's good enough now, and he thinks United may be a little bit behind, and he sees some potential opportunity there. American stock price has done really well after coming out of bankruptcy. So maybe he just loves a turnaround, right? He did the turnaround America West, turnaround at American, now maybe a turnaround at United. United has been struggling compared to some of the other airlines that are out there.
The competition obviously is fierce, but there aren't very many of these airlines. Is that something that affects customers on a daily basis, this lack of competition?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think it's not as bad for people that are in bigger metro cities that have both low-cost airlines and legacy airlines, like Chicago, for example, L.A., New York, Dallas. But if you're in one of the smaller regional cities out there and you used to have two or three airlines that took you to a hub and took you where you needed to go, and Northwest isn't there anymore and Continental's not there anymore and U.S. Airways not there anymore, that absolutely changes the entire aspect of pricing and also keeps your prices high, because when prices go down low, there's no competition to reset the price points lower.
You know, as we this Labor Day holiday sort of marks the end of summer, is this sort of a sad time for you guys there at Fair Compare? Because, I mean, the travel season's over, or is it?
Well, you know, everybody's back in school. It is a little bit slower time. That's why ticket prices are cheaper. So it's actually kind of interesting. You have two sort of dynamics at play. One is you've got people ready for Thanksgiving travel and Christmas travel, so they're a little bit worried it's going to be expensive. And by the way, it can be expensive, so you need to be starting to shop fairly soon, especially for Thanksgiving right now. And then secondarily, some of the cheapest prices you've seen all year. So if you don't have to worry about your kids being in school, and let's say that they're all out of college or in college and you have time to fly, it is the cheapest time to fly. It's fun to get on the radio and say, hey, these are some really unbelievably cheap prices out there. I mean, essentially, if you're flying in September, October, first part of November, first part of December, and the last part of January, if you're paying over $200 anywhere in the United States, and in some cases Canada, you're paying too much out of Chicago.
You scared the heck out of me, though, recently, and our listeners, I'm sure, are one of our last conversations where you said fares were going to start going up exponentially every day. Is that something that's still going to happen, or are we still finding deals?
No, there's plenty of deals out there for the sort of off-peak times, but that probably was mentioning Thanksgiving. So it's sort of like, hey, it's not so much exponentially. Add a dollar a day for the next couple of weeks and then start adding $2 a day, then start adding $4 a day. Now that starts to add up where you're going to pay an extra $100 for Thanksgiving, especially if you want to travel the Wednesday before, the most popular day of the year, and Sunday after, the second most popular day of the year.
If people are out looking for fares, I want to pick your brain about some of the secrets of finding cheap fares. What are the going rates? Because we've always heard, don't fly on this day, don't buy your ticket on that day. What is it that passengers should know about this whole hunting for bargains?
Yeah, so look, I mean, let's go through sort of what an airline person does. So a marketing person comes in on Monday, they set up the website and they say, look, we're going to have our sale and we're going to file it late tonight. We got to get everything prepared. So almost all airfare sales, about 2/3 of them based on our data, which is literally trillions and trillions of data points, are filed Monday night. The next morning at 10 a.m., the other airlines actually get to see that because it comes across their desk as part of the airfare filing, and they all start to match. Sometimes it's automated. Sometimes humans are involved. And remember, they have to have a landing page, and they have to, if they were going to have a radio commercial or something, they all have to prepare. When people say that it's cheaper on the weekends to shop, the people in the marketing departments at airlines don't work on Saturdays and Sundays. Only one airfare filing a day on Saturdays and Sundays, almost no volume. volume. So all the volume occurs Monday night. During the week, there's four airfare filings domestically. And so that Tuesday, finally, they get to file their fares at 1 p.m. They start to hit the reservation system slightly after that. Typically around 3 p.m. Eastern time, 2 p.m. Central time on Tuesday is a perfect time to find a cheap sale fare, if the sales are out there. And typically they're out there. Now, a lot of these sales have fares that have rules on them that say only good Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. So they're going to be your three cheapest days to fly. Now, the sale fares also cover Monday, Friday, and Sunday. They're just not as cheap.
So if we do follow Fare Compare, and we do, can we set up an alert on there to let, so you do the work for us and tell us?
Absolutely.
Like say, hey, I want to go to Hawaii.
Yeah, absolutely. You just go, I'd like to go from Chicago, pick two or three cities, as many as you want, Honolulu, Maui, Kona, and you basically just say, watch this trip, and then every time the price changes, and that means every hour if it changes, if you want it that much, we can send you notifications when it drops, when nonstops drop, when connecting flights drop, when your favorite airline drops, for example. So it's the great way to follow what's going on. The one thing that people do typically that causes them the most heartache when buying travel is they procrastinate. If you're inside of 30 days before departure, you're playing right into the airline's hands. They actually have the cheapest fares out there typically, which are 30-day advance purchase. And the airlines have over 10 years of digital history in our shopping habits. They know we love to procrastinate, and that's where they get us with those extra dollars to have those seats at the last minute.
So I saw something yesterday that I was like, really? Another one of the fare websites, I don't even want to say it's one of your competitors because I think it's not. I think it's just one of those websites. They actually will allow people to buy plane tickets and pay payments for them.
Yeah, this is actually very popular in South America. So if you want, the ticket prices are so expensive out of places like Brazil that you actually have the equivalent of layaway. So essentially you're getting credit and you're paying an interest rate in order to buy your ticket now, take your trip now, and then pay off your ticket over time. I was wondering when we were going to see that here in the U.S., especially for more expensive tickets like to Europe and to Asia. And it looks like it's shown up here with sort of the layaway plan to buy a ticket.
Is it a smart thing to do? Because I think, you know, we've all been conditioned to, well, you're going to pay interest, so the ticket's going to end up costing us more. But are these smart things to do, especially when it's like a $2,000 fare to someplace?
Yeah, it depends on what the interest rate is, right? And your ability to pay for something. If you have to go on that trip and that's the only way you can do it, if your credit card's at 13% interest and then they're only charging you, 3% or 4% interest to do it, it's definitely worthwhile, especially if you're not going to pay off your credit card. So you have to do a little mental math when you're off to do it to see which one is a better deal to actually pay ahead of time or layaway. It just depends on the interest rate.
So as we head into September and the autumn coming up here, get us out of town. Where can we go?
Yeah, so, I was looking at a variety of places out of Chicago. I mean, it's kind of, the price points are so low, it's kind of scary. It's like, I was sort of looking, for example, the Tuesday, September 20th departures. Here's some examples. Seattle, $117 round trip. Portland, $147. San Francisco, also $147. LA, $117 round trip. If you're going down to South Florida, Orlando, $107 round trip. Miami, $127. To the coast, $107. Boston. Now, some of these are on Frontier, some of them are on Spirit, but many of them are on United, American, Southwest, and Delta.
So you can almost throw the dart at the dartboard and just pick wherever you want to go.
The most expensive I could find, over $200, was Salt Lake City at $220 round trip.
All right. Happy, safe travels, Rick.
Hey, thanks.
Rick Cini, the president and CEO of FareCompare.com out of Dallas, at Rick Cini and at FareCompare. By the way, that other website, cheapfares.com, where you can buy your plane ticket on payments.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:53. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures now off 10 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures lower as well. Let's find out what's happening in agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, let me begin by saying it was a disappointing day for me yesterday. Thunderstorms on the flying route to Boone, Iowa, made it impossible to fly Air Orion out for the opening day, so I missed it. We're going to give it another try in about 45 minutes this morning and hopefully make the Boone Farm Progress Show today and tomorrow. 2 years ago, I missed the entire show because of rain and thunderstorm activity. Headlines in the grain market. We saw corn and wheat futures falling to multi-year lows yesterday. Soybeans hitting a four-week low. Again, big crops and rising grain supplies, the reason for that. But at the Mercantile Exchange, finally, August live cattle futures ended higher, the first time in 12 sessions, and that contract will terminate today at noon. Most actively traded October contract gained $2.40 yesterday, ending the day at $107.45, and feeder cattle did very well. And the October feeder cattle contract up $4.25 a hundredweight, ending the day at $139.52. Even lean hogs traded higher yesterday with the October contract up 62 cents. Headlines this morning. Department of Agriculture closed offices in five states yesterday after anonymous threats. And Potash Corporation and Agrium are talking merger. But that will get a close look by the Justice Department, probably in both Canada and the United States. Day number two, Farm Progress Show, 11:30 to 1 with the band. Max Armstrong and I will be on stage at the ADM tent. Stop by and say hello. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you have a great day as well, and good luck getting off the ground with Air Orion later this morning. By the way, I told you before we went to the break, the other airfare that was offering those payments, cheapair.com, not cheapairfare.com, cheapair.com is the website we talked about with Rick Cini.